ABOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Hey, we've got a brand new war to talk about as our Peace Prize president bombs his 7th sovereign nation this month.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Friends of Jordan 5K and Kids Run. Saturday, October 11th at 9 a.m. Friends of Jordan is an organization that provides support for families as they go through the trials of serious childhood illness. This fun run and walk will raise funds for Adult in Reno, a 22-month-old from Salem. Again, that's the Friends of Jordan 5K and Kids Run. On Saturday, October 11th at 9 a.m. at Forest Grove High School, 1401 Nichols Lane in Forest Grove. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the home page under Community Events.
Two years ago, Portland lost a musical and cultural icon with the passing of Ghanaian master drummer, bandleader, and teacher Obo Adi. His contribution to the raising of local knowledge and appreciation of African music in general, and Ghanaian music in particular, and his tireless work with local youth cannot be overstated. As part of our fall membership drive, KBOO is proud to present a celebration and retrospective of Obo's work on Thursday, October 2nd, from 1 until 4 p.m. Musical offerings, remembrances, and interviews will be part of this important figure's legacy. Join Andy Hosh and DJ Charlie and others at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 2nd. The preceding hour, from noon until 1 p.m., will be filled with Ghanaian music as part of DJ Charlie's regular World Beat Connection time slot. See you then.
Tune into KBOO on Wednesday, October 1st for Turning the Tide on Climate Change.
An all-day special about climate change and the actions we must take now.
And don't miss a special guest, Naomi Klein, talking about her new book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate at 1 p.m.
That's Turning the Tide on Climate Change on Wednesday, October 1st, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. on
KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Northwest Connector, connecting riders to the Oregon coast through daily round-trip bus routes from Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. Northwest Connector buses are equipped with bike racks and offer 3 and 7 day passes with transfers up and down the coast. Schedules and trip planner at nwconnector.net.
There's this great Popeye cartoon where he gets inside a Bluto's shirt and he's popping out of his sleeves going, "Here I am! Yoo-hoo!" And Bluto is confused. He's going,
"Hey, where'd you... Why you...
And he's trying to beat up Popeye and he ends up pummeling himself. And that
is the war on terror. That is the war on terror. It's the war on terror.
There's this old joke where a guy is walking home late at night. He sees another guy under a streetlight, searching frantically in the gutter. He says, "Hey man, what did you lose?" Guy says, "I dropped my keys about 6 blocks away." "Why aren't you looking over there?" Guy says, "The light's better over here." And that
is the war on terror.
That is the war on terror. Yeah, that's the war on terror. Is the war on terror. We got a vacuum cleaner on sale. Oh, I'm so sorry, but we're out of that model. Get you out the door.
active war that leaves your floor dirtier than before. There's that great quote about war, and I'm trying to remember who said it. That the people can always be brought to do the bidding of the leaders. You just tell them they're under attack and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism. Now who said that? Oh yeah, it was Hermann Göring.
I am so pissed.
Yeah.
I third time.
Context, Joe, context. Third time. What does that mean?
Third war in Iraq.
Oh, well, yeah.
Set of lies, third bit of nonsense, third time when Americans and others will be brought to slaughter each other, and we keep underestimating the number of soldiers who come back from these wars seriously injured and devastated, and we give them no service, and I don't even know where to go. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe. I'm Joe, and I'm angry.
Yeah, you are. But, you know, war is peace, and we have always been at war with Oceania.
So, 1984, man.
Yeah, man. Why do I? Well, I think it's a pretty apt metaphor, don't you?
Oh, I do. I'm not putting you down. I'm almost nearly, not quite, speechless.
Well, we want to dig into this brand new war in the Middle East, because despite the attempts of the Obama administration to call it anything but a war, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, you know what they say.
Right.
It's a war.
Well, and we only have a few hundred, maybe a few thousand troops on the ground, and they're just to train the Iraqis that we already trained.
I have a feeling that we're going to see more before this is all over.
And the enemy here, I mean, let's just go through a few facts. There has been disputations in this region dating back to the conquest of it by Muhammad. There have been struggles of great empires in this region even before that. There is now a struggle not dissimilar to earlier ones between Sunni and Shia. There are the Kurds who want their own homeland. We're supporting the Peshmerga, but not the PKK, because they blew up a Turkish airplane years ago. And the fact of the matter is, if the Kurds are our successful allies, and by the way, they were the people who rescued the people on the mountains, not us. If we support them, then where is our ally in NATO? Turkey, and where is Iran, and where is Iraq, and where is Syria, all of which, parts of which, would be logically the homeland of the Kurds. If we solved all that, if we knocked out the ISIS or the caliphate in Iraq, if we did that successfully, which seems unlikely, then who else would pop up? And when would it ever end?
We have always been at war with Oceania. All right, let's sum up briefly what's going on in the Middle East right now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got it.
You be rational, because I'm really angry.
Well, I'm going to start out rational, but I can't guarantee I'll stay that way.
Okay.
That's my disclaimer.
All right.
Right now. You heard it here first.
Fair enough.
All right, we have a residual force in Afghanistan.
Yes.
That has been there longer than anticipated.
10,000.
10,000 of them since 2002.
About, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a residual force in Iraq.
Yeah.
They're a lot longer than anticipated.
Yeah.
We have a presence in Libya.
Yeah.
We are dropping bombs on Syria.
Yeah.
For now, a couple of reasons. First, to ostensibly support the rebels against the Assad regime. And now, as of just a few weeks ago, to blow up this splinter group affiliated with Al-Qaeda, the Khorasan group.
The Khorasan group. Isn't that a kind of shoe?
May or may not actually be its name. That's sort of unclear at this point. Yes, we're dropping bombs on Syria to help the anti-Assad rebels and to kill the Khorasan group. All of this against a backdrop of a purported grave threat to the homeland. I really hate that word, by the way. We should talk about that a little bit later on. And increased terror warnings across the board, stepped up security measures across the board, and a general feeling that we should be very, very, very afraid, and that we should give our president carte blanche to pursue whatever military options are on his plate. And there are many. It is a full American military plate, ladies and gentlemen. And we're asked to swallow all of this whole without any evidence, without any justification, beyond be very, very afraid.
It's even worse than that. Almost all the weapons, particularly the heavy weapons that this ISIS, whatever it is, has, are basically weapons that we gave, just dumped on the Iraqis, and they essentially let them fall into the enemy's hands. And Assad seems to like the caliphate. He hasn't bombed them. You look at the maps. He has not attacked them at all.
No, despite the fact that they now control a sizable swath of his nation. It's all a very messed up situation there, not least of all, because we decided to invade the place in 2003. That was the crack through which all these demons have come. That was it. Let's think back on this for a moment. You all recall the day that Colin Powell went before the United Nations.
And lied.
You remember the day? That day will live in infamy. You've heard of the painting Guernica by Picasso?
Oh, yes.
Big painting. Guernica was a village in northern Spain. Before World War II broke out, the Nazis were in power in Germany. There was a fascist dictatorship under Francisco Franco in Spain. And the Franco regime...
And Mussolini in Italy.
There was some unrest in this village of Guernica. Franco wanted to put it down. The Germans, being friendly to their fellow fascists, offered to help. This was really an excuse for Germany to try out the full force of its new modern air force, the Luftwaffe. They bombed the crap out of the village of Guernica, leveled it to the ground. Picasso made a brilliant painting of it, a profound, profound anti-war piece, and it is now hanging in the United Nations, in the main chamber, where the General Assembly meets. The day that Colin Powell went to testify before the UN to present to the world the justification for our war in Iraq, the United States arranged, to have that painting covered up.
I didn't know that. Is that true?
Yes. Now, that's a seeming side note, but to me, almost a perfect symbol of what has transpired since that day. Colin Powell went before the UN, and he told everybody to be very, very afraid. He presented a bunch of evidence that was not really evidence. He held up a little empty vial to indicate that this empty vial might one day be filled with imaginary weapons of mass destruction, diseases and biological agents and chemical agents and blah, 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 blah. And he managed to scare the pants off of everybody. Then we went on to invade Iraq. Powell later said, I suppose to his credit, but I think it's to his enduring shame that he was there in the first place. He later said that the evidence he went in there with was insufficient. And he more or less admitted that he was parroting the administration's line. We went to war in Iraq. We've been there ever since. And now, all of a sudden, it seems all we need to justify increased military action in the Middle East is for the President of the United States to say we should be scared. That's how low the bar has been set for us, my fellow Americans.
Oh, it's just disgusting. we're bombing the infrastructure in Syria. We're bombing essentially oil supply depots. We're bombing oil processing plants. We're bombing grain elevators.
Yes.
Grain elevators so that people will starve. Not the people we are supposed to be attacking, but anybody. We are essentially destroying the infrastructure as much as we possibly can, just as we did when we went initially in the second war into Iraq. It's just so... I don't understand what I love the fact that there were 300,000 to 400,000 people in the streets of New York and a few thousand here in Portland the other weekend protesting climate change dangers and denial and the need to change things. I'm really glad that Naomi Klein has written a book that says that capitalism essentially is inimical to the survival of the planet. It's great that she's done that. I always think there is a possibility. And yet, where are the marches? Where is the outrage? Where is the extreme anger of young people, of old people, of all people at what we are doing in the world? I don't see it. What's happened? We're just numb.
I'm going to tell you what happened, Joe.
What happened?
We just talked about how Colin Powell set the stage for the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
That war happened. Everything that followed from the September 11th attacks has happened in this country. We now live in a modern digital surveillance state.
Yes.
We have now seen our Fourth Amendment protections virtually eroded entirely.
Yes.
We've seen our First Amendment freedoms virtually eroded entirely. This is the new normal. We are at permanent war. We live in a modern surveillance state, and that's the way it is. And I think most people don't even care anymore. It's been too long. This has been going on too much. And you ask, where are the bodies? Well, the bodies are at home. People don't care. Sizable majorities of America believe what's being fed to them. Support the airstrikes in Syria. Support the expanded military action of the United States and its allies in the Mideast. We have always been at war with Oceania.
You know, I would love to kind of say, oh, come on, it's not 1984, but it is. It's just a softer, gentler, more clever version.
Yeah. One of George Orwell's lasting contributions to the English lexicon was the term newspeak. You've heard this?
Yeah.
Yes. This is the newspeak refers to a certain species of official communication that seems to say that reality is everything but what is actually going on. What? President Obama has reached for a convoluted legal justification for going to war without actually calling it war. If we don't actually send uniformed soldiers in, the much ballyhooed boots on the ground, then it's not actually war. But tell that to the people who are dying at the business end of bombs dropped by American planes.
And what's being ignored beyond that is the fact that hundreds of thousands of American soldiers have had serious injuries that are being largely ignored and not put into the calculation of what these wars cost. So we have walking wounded Americans, innumerable Americans, and we ignore that. We ignore that in so many ways, and our Veterans Administration doesn't take care of that. We are unable to deal with the fact that people are unable to get jobs. We are unable to deal with the fact that the climate is deteriorating around us. We are unwilling and unable to deal with the fact that 1% of 1% controls everything to the degree of 40% of all of the stuff.
You talk about the cost of this war. Put that against the backdrop of the new normal, economically speaking, in this country. We have long-term unemployment still languishing in this country. We have a concentration of wealth in this country unprecedented since the Gilded Age of the late 1800s. There is no returning to the robust middle-class manufacturing-based economy that we enjoyed in the post-war decades in this country. That is the new normal. You have a conservative faction, a wealthy faction, that controls the levers of government in this country that is now so firmly entrenched that we can no longer hope for any rational redistribution of wealth in this country such that we return to anything resembling what used to be the middle class structure in this country. So on top of that, you have another war being launched. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have cost us trillions of dollars in just over a decade, and now we are re-escalating the conflict there. Meanwhile, Americans are out of work, people are dropping out of the middle class, and we have a ruling elite that is only getting more rich and more entrenched.
And the this climate is going to hell.
This is the new normal.
Yeah, I want to hear from folks out there. I would like to hear from somebody who says, no, this is a really sensible thing, but I don't care. I want to hear from you, and I want to know why people aren't in the streets. The outrage is lacking. Are we just inured? Are we just made numb by the blow after blow after blow against our consciousness? 231-8187.
Let's go to the phones. Jane, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, James, how's it going, man?
The people are not in the streets because we are completely demoralized and beat down by the empire.
Well, you know, this is weird. You and I disagree about so much, and yet what you just said is true.
Well, we're looking at things from a different perspective. Being that we live in an Orwellian nightmare, I think it's time to kind of stand back and abandon all of our contemporary notions of what's going on and kind of go back to the Enlightenment era and reboot the system.
Well, that's, you know, actually, I wouldn't even argue with you on that. Amazingly. Amazingly. Anyway, listen, I want to thank you for the call, man. You have a new respect for you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, man. Take care.
Bye.
Okay.
See? See?
Well, you enjoy your new respect for James.
231-8187. Who we got?
Michael, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Oh, hey. Hi, Michael. Haven't heard from you in a while.
No, but I decided to give it another try.
Go ahead, man.
You guys talk like 9/11 never happened.
Hey.
I mean,
I believe,
you know, it's like, oh, all the costs, all this, all that. But what about the jihadists? What about the jihadists? What about jihadism?
Michael, wait a second. Nobody's...
What about a movement that started with Ayatollah Khomeini saying when the prospect of something like a nuclear war with the West came up, I don't care if Iran burns because I don't care about Iran. The point is to spread
the world. How did Khomeini come to be in power, Michael?
Well, that's an interesting and more complicated story than you probably think, you know?
No, it's really not that complicated.
Well,
shall
know,
I sum it up for you?
I think it is.
Shall I sum it up for you?
No, you don't have to sum it up for me. Khomeini got into power because the people, like the ones you would support in the Arab Spring, sort of the enlightened, westernized people of Iran, got so fed up with the Shah that they thought they would hang with the Islamists instead.
How did the Shah get into power?
How did the Shah get? What do you want to go back and start with the Big Bang? The Shah got into power because... Mossadegh looked like he was going to go with the Russians, and we couldn't afford to let Iran fall to the communists.
And nothing to do with oil there? Nothing to do with the British
it had
petroleum?
Something to do with oil, and it also had to do with the Russians getting warm water ports on the Gulf of Persia.
The connection I was getting to, Michael, is that Khomeini took power because of United States intervention. It's the very definition of blowback. So you talk about where did the jihadist movement begin? Well, one could say quite credibly that it began as a blowback to United States intervention in the Middle East. Now you're talking, I presume, about the jihadist movement that animated Al-Qaeda and the attacks of September 11th, 2001, and who have animated the resistance to American occupation in the Middle East since the invasion of Iraq in 2003. And the answer is, again, that is a reaction to American imperialism and American military presence and intervention.
You are wrong. Oh, everything is America's fault, Brett, to quote Johnny Carson.
Okay, listen.
Everything is not America's fault, and everything isn't blowback. I mean,
I didn't say everything was America's fault.
No, yeah, sure
I
you
said
are.
The
well,
jihadist movement
it's America's fault. It's all
was
a
reaction to American military intervention.
We could try this, Michael, and I think you might even agree with it. What is the business of America is the business of America. What is the business of all the rest of the world is the business of all the rest of the world. And when we naively, mostly, attempt to run things in the interest of a small number of American wealthy people, we run into disaster. And that's really what's happened.
No, I don't think so. I think what happened was 9/11 happened, and we decided to go after the sons of bitches who did it, and we did a great job of it at first, until Bush screwed it up about halfway through Iraq. Then Bush recovered, and then Obama screwed it up in his own unique way. And now here we are again with ISIS. You know, ISIS is an incredible danger, and, you know, it seems to me like you guys either aren't into recognizing that, or you're going to blow it off as, oh, it's all America's fault. It's all a reaction to what America did. It's all blowback. I mean, you guys seem like you're so into your politics that you're incapable of seeing an actual threat.
Let me unpack that a bit at a time, if I could.
Unpack. Well, sure. You go ahead and unpack it.
Thank you very much. Yes, 9/11 happened. I don't believe that this conversation was carried out in the context somehow that it didn't happen. I mentioned it when I described Colin Powell before the UN, and all of this was framed by the events that have transpired since the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Where the United States went wrong was invading a country that had nothing to do with those attacks. And almost everything that has gone wrong in the Middle East since then, you can draw a bright line between the American invasion and occupation of Iraq to everything that has transpired since then. ISIS, whom you paint as an existential threat, and for the sake of argument, I'll concede that the jury is out on that. ISIS arose in a vacuum caused by the collapse of the Saddam Hussein regime after the invasion of Iraq. Now, this is not an endorsement of Hussein or of his regime or of his tactics or of his politics or anything else. But the fact remains, would ISIS have been able to carve out a third of Iraq if Saddam Hussein were still in power? Really, I don't think so.
This is not why ISIS came about. ISIS came about because we had that whole country pacified by Petraeus's brilliant surge strategy. And then Obama carelessly pulled completely out and let the whole thing collapse. ISIS wouldn't have had a chance if we'd have gotten that status of forces.
Michael, your analysis that somehow the invasion and occupation of Iraq were successful and that General Petraeus' brilliant strategy had pacified that country is dubious at best. In fact, I'll go a little farther and say it is plain wrong, and it is ignorant, and it is in contradiction to reality. I'm not sure why gazing through red, white, and blue glasses makes you feel so good. And you can accuse Joe and I all day long of blaming America for everything, but that's simply not true. And it's also a fact that everything that has gone wrong in the Middle East since the invasion of Iraq was because of the invasion of Iraq.
Anyway, Michael, I'm glad you called. I love hearing from you, and I want to assert once again that you're always welcome to call, even though we often disagree with you.
Well, okay, as long as I get my chance, and it doesn't end up with Abe yelling at me for 5 minutes.
Well, you got to live with Abe.
I can't
what can
guarantee
I say?
That. I
anyway, thank you for
that.
Calling, man.
Sure, bye.
Take care. He always makes you so angry, Abe.
Well, because he's a smart guy, and I think he should know better. And I guess I expect more from him.
Okay.
General Petraeus' brilliant surge strategy, the pacification of Iraq. Did he have his eyes and his ears plugged up during that 10 years?
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Let's hear some other people. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Well, hi.
Great show today, full of emotion. I like that. I believe that the war in Iraq has a two-prong effect. One is to secure the Iraqi oil from the new trouble, and for the multinational corporations, you know, a lot of them being American. Mm-hmm. And the second is a distraction to because the march on the climate, for the climate, is calling for a major change, especially amongst the oil, especially amongst the energy producing companies, coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear, who are destroying our planet, and they're running scared right now. Solar is gaining a tremendous amount. It's almost exponential, and so I feel that the war has always classically been used as a distraction away from other situations. So I feel that's what's happening here. It's serving as a distraction. The media is serving it up every day like a great dish. And if it bleeds, it leads, of course. So the more gory, the more people pay attention. But this is to pull them away against the march, march for the climate, which is very, very, very serious. We're at the edge here. And so those forces that want to continue in the old ways are working their darndest to make sure that were distracted. And
well, yeah, I mean, the vast sums of money that the Koch brothers and others in the energy business are pouring into the election coming up, where a significant percentage of the population of people who, for example, voted for Obama seem paralyzed and unaware even that there is such an election, is very, very scary. Now, a lot of errors are made on the part of people like me, perhaps, who think there's a possible liberal in the small L sense, solution, a way, a middle way, somehow a return to Roosevelt's programs of the 1930s and 40s. I think we're past that. I think what Naomi Klein says in her book, This Changes Everything, is absolutely correct. I think if you make a serious, deep analysis of what's going on, the fact of the matter is we're in end-stage capitalism, and at this point, that system has failed not only us but the world. The world is in crisis. It's in crisis on the political and war level. It's also in crisis on the absolute environmental level. And the incredible thing is that most Americans are still being entertained to death and still unaware, and I am so disappointed that there are not thousands of people in the streets protesting this insanity initiated by Obama, who, because I'm afraid we have a liberal bias toward the idea of what is a good thing abstractly, an African-American president, we are unwilling to call this problem what it is and to acknowledge that he is simply the instrument of a ruling class and a doomed ruling class at that.
Well, anyway. I appreciate your view very much.
Anyway, man, that's where my head's at. And I, as you can tell, I'm very angry and upset with this whole thing.
Yeah, I am too. What really troubles me is how much this resembles the propaganda and the rhetoric in advance of the invasion of Iraq. And it's a long time ago, I know. And I know that so many of you on the left, and I count myself among you, are feeling war fatigue. And you're feeling weary. It's so much has happened in the last 15 years to provoke our outrage that it is sometimes hard to feel outraged anymore. There's a sort of white noise of bad news in the background. But what's going on now? This is cause for outrage. This is so reminiscent of what happened before we invaded Iraq. First, there was the appearance of ISIS. And I want to be rational and objective here. ISIS is an actual thing. They are a group of people who has carved out a big chunk of sovereign territory from, two, three nations.
And they're crazy. And they're crazy mean.
They are crazy mean. And they are brutal. And they are murdering even fellow Muslims. None of this is to say that ISIS is not a thing. But we have the administration, including Obama himself, say that ISIS poses no credible existential threat to the United States. This has been reported by Reuters, by the Associated Press, by the New York Times, by everybody. We have the president himself on the record saying ISIS is not a credible threat to the United States. But nevertheless, we started bombing them anyway. For a whole host of ostensible
reasons. Well, we can change that. We can make them a credible threat. Just bomb them, bomb them, bomb them.
Bomb them, bomb them, bomb them. And now we have this new thing, the Khorasan group, which allegedly is so classified that we can't even be told all the details about them. But trust us, they're scary enough and they're enough of a threat that we really need to bomb them off the planet. Trust us. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I need more. I am a thinking citizen of what is nominally a free republic. And if my country is going to war, that is the weightiest decision that a civilization can undertake. And I need to know. We all need to know. Who are these people? Why are they so scary? Why do we need to bomb them off the face of the planet? I'm sorry, but at whatever reservoir of trust and good faith the United States government may once have had, it is all gone. That all drained away after Iraq was invaded. So, Mr. President, we need to know what's going on here. The full story. The whole story. If we are going to war, we deserve nothing less.
I agree. And I don't really think there's a justification. Let's be clear. Bad people are moving in Iraq and in Syria. Bad things are happening. Horrible things are happening. Horrible things are happening in Africa. The whole fundamentalist movement of Islam, by the way, not to say that there aren't bad other fundamentalist movements in other faiths, This is bad stuff. But we, that is the United States, do not need, nor should we become involved in a sectarian war that we have very little understanding of. It's just plain stupid. We're going to be suddenly allies with Iran, suddenly allies with Syria. Syria has leadership that has poisoned its own people. Suddenly these are the good guys? What? Now suddenly they'll turn around and be the bad guys. We know that the Peshmerga, we know that the PKK are trying to create a separate state for the people that they support. We know that that's going on. What's that going to do to Turkey? What's that going to do to Iran? What's that going to do to Iraq? What's that going to do to Syria? Let's realize that we're messing in a vast pool of filth that will lead us inevitably into armed conflict in who knows where.
Now, I had a conversation about this situation yesterday with someone close to me, a person of good conscience, and she was of the opinion that this is what she said. She said, this sounds like Republican tactics. This sounds like something the previous administration was done. I have a hard time believing that President Obama is going to lie to the American people and take us to war for reasons that are either self-serving or serving the narrow, profitable interests of a tiny sliver of the ruling class. And I would like to think the same thing, which is why it's so important that the government be transparent about this. Which it is not. And as I just mentioned a few minutes ago, any reservoir of goodwill the government had on issues of war and peace is gone. They need to explain to us what's going on, why this is such a threat. And if they don't, I'm forced to assume that this is same old, same old. This is war for profit. This is war to control resources. This is war to control key geopolitical points.
Absolutely. And now you have to do this.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio, Bruce Schneier speaks on the internet, privacy, and power. At 10, it's Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, with the upcoming biopic of the late, great investigative reporter Gary Webb. He's the guy who broke the story about how the CIA introduced crack cocaine to South Central LA.
That's right, and he ended up killing himself when he was smeared viciously.
Yep, and shunted off to a backwater job.
And it turned out to be absolutely true.
Absolutely true.
CIA, cocaine, crack cocaine in the neighborhoods of minorities.
Yes. With the upcoming biopic of the late great investigative reporter Gary Webb set to be released on October 10th, Dennis Bernstein discusses Webb's life and legacy with Robert Perry. Later,
another good person.
Yes. Later, we hear excerpts of the documentary film Spies of Mississippi. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts checks in with Damaso Rodriguez, artistic director of Artist Repertory Theater. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan speaks with Celie Pines and Kate Bingaman Burt about Design Week Portland 2014. Pines runs a graphic design business, and Bingaman Burt teaches graphic design at Portland State University. All this and more coming up today.
Yeah,
on KBOO.
Really good. And I got to warn everybody, starting tomorrow, warn them, make you eager to give us money. I really want to make clear something. This is the only voice of dissent, the only voice of progressive effort, the only voice that brings you incredibly good music, but at the same time brings you the truth. And if you care at all, you will need to make a significant contribution to this station, and that's all I'm going to say about that. I want to talk again. We need to talk again about this impending weird war that we are engaged in, where we bomb the hell out of the people and the infrastructure in northern Iraq and in Syria, and in the process kill lots and lots of people and make ourselves incredibly unpopular. Let's hear from you. 231-8187.
Now, normally when I post a web promo of this show, I include a lot of links to various articles that informed this discussion. We had a little trouble with the site's web or the station's website yesterday, so I was unable to do that. But I encourage you to read what Glenn Greenwald has to say on this in particular. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best investigative journalists out there. So Google Glenn Greenwald and ISIS and Khorasan if you want some good reading on this subject. 503-231-8187. Corey writes to the Abe and Joe Facebook page, which you can offer comments on at facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Corey writes, on the front end, the new F-35 fighter jet has been repeatedly redesigned. The cost of developing the plane has doubled to a record-breaking $400 billion, the most expensive weapon system ever. A single plane will cost $185 million.
But it's so cool. Produce.
It is so cool, and it's being used right now in the Middle East.
I'm so proud.
On the back end, Corey writes, veterans hospitals are still using an outdated MS-DOS system for its administrative functions. It's still used by the VA for discharge summaries, progress notes, and other clinical documents. This is bad comedy, Corey writes. Yes, with a significant dose of tragedy.
Really?
Mixed in.
Really. And, you know, people, we have one of the biggest mistakes I think the movement made back in the Vietnam War era was to call for the end to the draft. That was a mistake. If we had a draft, at least people, maybe only men, would see that their lives are at stake and there would be a national movement much stronger than the one that's there now. That's what I think. And it was just a tactical error because it made sense to stop the draft to stop the war in Vietnam. By the way, the United States movement did a great deal of damage to the credibility of that war, but the Vietnamese won it.
Let's go to the phones. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. I was telling you to say that I'm not necessarily opposed to the bombing. I think that we can't underestimate ISIS terrorism, and we can't make this about the United States. There's a genocide against Kurds and Yazidis underway. Mm-hmm. I think the bombing is hitting the wrong targets, though. The targets should be the ISIS positions behind the lines surrounding Rojava. Mm. Rojava's got an advanced revolution underway. They've been fighting ISIS for 2 years without help. They're the only forces fighting ISIS with victories. Women lead that revolution. The war has always been about world powers using ISIS against revolutionary Rojava. At least that's true in the present moment. Instead of demanding a bombing, I think we should be talking about UN help for all refugees from Sinjar and Rojava, regardless of their political affiliation. The PKK has to be delisted from the list of terrorist organizations and be allowed to buy modern weapons on the world market. There has to be support for Rojava. Öcalan has to be freed in Turkey so that either the peace process can be renegotiated or the guerrilla struggle can be reignited in Turkey. You should be demanding a democratic Turkey and a democratic Federal Republic of Kurdistan. This is not a sectarian war, and the demand is not for a separate state for Kurds. It's for a democratic autonomy of Kurdish communities, which is quite different. Mm-hmm. I would also hope that people would go to turkeyharvest.blogspot.com. It's an Oregon blog which deals with daily accounts of the liberation movement in the region. But primary should be supporting that liberation movement, and a section of that liberation movement wants and needs bombings behind the ISIS lines surrounding Rojava. The United States so-called anti-imperialist, anti-war movements refuse to talk about Rojava and take that seriously. As those people's options dwindle, the need for outside intervention grows. Our solidarity is really important in carving another path here.
But see, I don't hear those causes being invoked when I hear the administration justifying our military action now.
That's right. There should be a common front against ISIS, and when people come into a common front, people come in for their own motivations. If the PKK is delisted and Rojava is allowed to buy weapons on the international market, what the United States does is of less consequence. But right now, we need a bombing behind the ISIS lines surrounding Rojava. This is a genocide.
So you're arguing for the application of U.S. military force to prevent genocide. Now, I have to say that I don't know enough about the specifics of that situation.
Let me state my position. I'm also arguing that bombing supports a revolution that's the most advanced revolution in the world.
Again, I don't know enough about the specifics of this situation to comment, but
you will.
No, I will offer this comment. I will say that military intervention to prevent genocide and to support a democratic revolution is a whole lot easier for me to stomach than phony phantom threats about some shadowy terror group.
That's right. Good.
Yes.
So support a bombing behind the ISIS lines around Rojava. I don't care who does it at this point. Somebody's got
to
do it.
I'm not willing to offer that endorsement until I learn more, but I do appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
blogspot.com. We give a daily account of the fighting from the liberation movement perspective.
Repeat that site again.
turkeyharvest.blogspot.com.
Okay. Thank you, actually, for the call. I'll look into it. We'll look into it. I'm not buying it, but I think it's interesting, and it was useful to hear you.
Thank you.
Now, there's a whole other side of the situation that has me really disturbed as well.
What's that?
That is the constitutional side of this.
Oh, you mean like the president goes to war without the approval of Congress?
That's right.
That little thing?
That's right. When this intervention first got underway, actually going back farther to our intervention in Libya, the president claimed authority, broad-reaching authority as commander-in-chief, under the powers granted him.
War Powers Act, yeah.
No, not the War Powers Act, the authorization for the use of military force
that
was passed before the invasion of Afghanistan.
Right.
The one that says, essentially, that broadens the president's executive authority as commander-in-chief beyond anything that had previously existed. The president can now use military force, essentially go to war, first without a declaration of war from Congress, and really where anywhere for any reason, so long as he is able to invoke, and I say he because so far there hasn't been a she, as long as he has been able to invoke national security.
Yep, it's really true. And I think there is a weird confusion, a tied-upness about this president that has to do with strong beliefs among liberals and others of the value inherently that exists in the notion of having an African-American be the first of his group to be president of the United States. It really ties things up in an odd way. We're much more tolerant of this guy.
Yes, yeah. I think amongst progressives, there needs to be a moment of soul searching here. You have to ask yourself, if I see this president, whom I support for a whole bunch of both rational and emotional reasons, if I see him doing things that I would question and I might even vociferously oppose under the previous guy, then I think you got to oppose them now also. And something happened in Britain this last week.
What was that?
There was actual debate in Parliament about joining this military effort.
Well, we don't even have a Congress that can anything. It's totally tied up, totally involved in trying to create a Republican majority.
There was a robust and vigorous debate in the legislative branch of the British government.
Right.
Followed by an actual vote.
Yes.
I don't hold any hopes of something like that happening here.
Oh, we don't do that. Well, for one thing, we don't have a parliamentary system where you can actually argue.
I want you, everybody, to think about that for a second. We're talking about continuing and escalating a very, very long military commitment in the Middle East.
Long and costly in bodies, costly in souls, costly in money, costly in resources, costly in treasure, and unending, no ending point.
And we're going to do it without even a discussion in the legislative branch of our government.
Yep. Yep.
Let's go back to the phones.
231-8187.
Oh.
Who do we got?
Amy, good morning.
Hello?
Hello, Amy. You're on the air.
Okay. Here we go. 9/11, look at architects and engineers discuss the controlled demolitions of three buildings. The airplanes, yep, they did.
No, we're not going to talk about whether 9/11 was a hoax. I'm sorry.
Okay.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Juan, good morning.
You know, I don't think you should hang up on people like that, Abe. I think that's, you know what? That's like Stalin, man.
No, no. It is not like Stalin. Thank you very much.
It might be rude, and it even might be unwise, but it's not like Stalin.
He called me up just to tweak me, and I let myself be tweaked.
You got tweaked. Yeah. You deserve it. Let me be clear on this. Do I even want to go there? It's pointless to have that conversation at this point. And there's no real evidence of anything other than what happening.
Amy, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I cut you off like that. But we're not going to go to that particular conversation today because it adds nothing and informs nothing about what we're talking about today.
And because, hey, I want to say this and may be very clear. Two airplanes hit the Twin Towers. it brought them down. There's plenty of evidence. We know that the buildings themselves were poorly built. We know that this is logical. We know that another plane, the passengers bravely realizing that they were going to die either way, brought that plane down. We know that the remaining plane crashed into the Pentagon. Yeah, that really did happen. We know this. We don't need to go all over the map to explain things in terms of conspiracies when we got perfectly good conspiracies going on right now. That's my position. Let's get with the conspiracies to destroy, to essentially destroy the last remaining bits of democracy, the conspiracies to continue a capitalist system that is bereft of any rational purpose, a system that has essentially reduced the income of Americans to that of people who are not able to meet the nut in their lives, a conspiracy that creates more and more wealth in the hands of 1% of 1%. If you want to focus on stuff, stay contemporary and pay attention. 231-8187. Who do we got? Roger, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I do like you hearing your historical analysis, but I have to totally disagree with 9/11, but that's not why I called.
Okay.
But I do recommend you read David Ray Griffin's books. But about Abe mentioned Glenn Greenwald.
Yes.
And I heard on the radio the person who wrote that piece with him mm-hmm. about how Khorasan doesn't even exist. It's just a fabrication of the West intelligence, and it's supposedly some people who might be associated with Al-Qaeda or ISIS who had a supposed plot that they had to stop. And then it turns out, you know, the whole media picked this up. One person puts out this story, and the whole media picks it up.
Well, they were going to soak the clothes in explosives.
But I would like Abe to talk about what was actually in that article, because it sounded like Khorasan actually didn't exist, and it was just something that was trumped up. It's a wag the dog scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And that ISIS, similarly, on a much larger scale, was essentially created to be what it is. And that, like, even, you know, I mean, you can listen to hear it on the other station, what, NPR. Mm-hmm. They talk about it even yesterday on the weekend when you guys don't have any public affairs programming. And Patrick Coburn saying, oh, well, who are we fighting? Why are we fighting the only people who are fighting Assad in Syria? I mean, if we overthrow Assad, then there's going to be a genocide of the Alawites and the Christians and everything. I mean, it's just, there's no goal here that's worthwhile. And then they invent or create, you know, the Saudis will fund, you know, this group that called ISIS, and they bring it, they roll it out, you know, for Labor Day. You know, you can't start a new war until after Labor Day, Rumsfeld said. And this whole thing is a whole huge wag the dog thing. And you talk about inert, I agree, we're inert. But most people are not war weary because they've got streaming Netflix. They've got entertainment up the wazoo. There's stuff going on everywhere. My friend was going around the country. She's in Philadelphia. She said, God, they got so much stuff going on there. There's parties and wild things going on here, there, every city in America. Entertainment up the wazoo.
Bread and circuses, man. Bread and circuses.
No one's paying attention. And most of what happens is faked, including, I have to say, 9/11. I mean, read David Ray Griffin's books, and I don't think you have. No one who denies 9/11 was an inside job has actually read the literature that explains what happened and how it couldn't possibly have happened the way the official scenario goes.
Okay, but so that's as far down that path as I want to go right now.
No, but I think I do want to say that what you've said makes a lot of sense on most in most issues. The 9/11 thing is to me a distraction. Whether or not, and I want to be clear, I don't think it's the case, but whether or not it was what people think it was, a conspiracy, it's irrelevant now. The fact of the matter is the United States is engaged in, with that as an excuse, an endless war in the Middle East, initially about oil and power. At this point, it's sort of the ultimate distraction while everything goes to hell.
Well, thank you very much for the call. Now, he wanted me to get a little more into Glenn Greenwald's writing on this subject. And
yes.
I'm going to do that very briefly. He's got an excellent piece on firstlook.org. If you Google that, you can find it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a little bit about Greenwald. He is, at the moment, I believe, an independent journalist, but his credentials are impeccable. His record is impeccable. So when he writes something, you can bet it's true. This is what he writes towards the end of his piece on firstlook.org. It turns out the very existence of an actual Corazon group was to some degree an invention of the American government. NBC's Richard Engel, the day after he reported on the U.S. government's claims about the group for nightly news, seemed to have serious second thoughts about the group's existence. And he tweeted, Syrian activists telling us they've never heard of Corazon or its leader. Greenwald goes on to write, indeed, a Nexus search for the group found almost no mention of its name prior to the September 13th Associated Press article based on anonymous American officials. There was one oblique reference to it in a July 31st CNN op-ed by Peter Bergen. The other mention was an article in the LA Times from 2 weeks earlier about Pakistan, which mentioned the group's name as something quite different than how it's being used now. So there's some serious questions as to whether or not the Corazon group is actually a thing. And as going back to what I said earlier, absent hard evidence being presented to us by our president, people of good conscience really have no option other than to trust him blindly or to conclude that maybe not as it seems.
There are so many levels of distortion and dishonesty and outright lying going on by this government and by this administration, by the Republicans, by the Koch brothers, and I can go on and on and on and on with an endless list, that it is very difficult to parse out what is partially true, what is truly true, what is totally lie. And that leaves us in an enormous disadvantage. And that's, I think, fairly deliberate. The fact that we argue things that happened years ago may or may not have happened as described. The fact that we are unable to come together as an aware public and demand that this nonsense of endless war end, that we don't see hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, is proof of the effectiveness of this nonsense.
And I think part of this, and by no means the smallest part, is a desire to make sure that we continue to be afraid, be very, very afraid. Much was made earlier in the summer about the release of those snuff films from ISIS, the beheadings of the two American journalists.
Yeah.
These were very slickly produced videos with alternate camera angles and cutting and even some effects, very slickly produced for the sort of soundbite consumption to which it was afraid, very, very afraid. And they were designed to provoke a violent reaction, which we have very conveniently provided to them. And as the wars in Afghanistan and in Iraq have taught us time and time again, nothing breeds another generation of terrorists. Enemy in the Muslim world, we can do no better than to continue to drop bombs on them.
Well, and beyond that, the real politic is such that we don't know. The United States is, I think, at best, I mean, this is the best interpretation, simply very naive. The worst interpretations, of course, are even worse than that. But look, we're engaged in sectarian warfare, taking sides. We're suddenly allied with a real awful dictator. We are suddenly now, because it's convenient for us, now we are always making friends with the Saudis, who we know poured money into ISIS. I mean, this is a mad situation. It is so insane, and that one American life would be lost in the course of this is stupid. That the United States would destroy its treasure. Well, there's one good reason to do that. You want a conspiracy? If you blow everything up, you have to build new stuff to blow everything up. And that makes jobs, and that makes rich people richer, and that, in and of itself, would make me doubt the wisdom of this.
War is good for business, and business is good.
And business is very good, and people are dying, and the climate is heating, and it is obvious that this late-stage capitalism cannot resolve the problems, the real problems that we all face. Get out in the street, make some noise, stop this war. We'll see you later. Stay tuned to KBOO. We do the truth, Ruth.
It's coming through a hole. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Sings Out, a benefit concert for the Yes on Measure 92 campaign. On Sunday, October 12th at 5 p.m., a diverse collection of Portland musicians will be putting on an evening of revitalized protest classics and creative original songs of revolution. Performers include Zia McCabe and Courtney Taylor Taylor of the Dandy Warhols, Jeremy Wilson of the Dharma Bums, KBOO's Mike Crenshaw, and many, many more. Again, Portland Sings Out will take place Sunday, October 12th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune into Cajun, the actions we must take now.
And don't miss a special guest, Naomi Klein, talking about her new book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate at 1 p.m.
That's Turning the Tide on Climate Change on Wednesday, October 1st, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. on
KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Bruce Schneier speaks on the internet privacy and power. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, with the upcoming biopic of the late great investigative reporter Gary Webb, set to be released on October 10th, Dennis Bernstein discusses Webb's life and legacy with Robert Perry. Later, we hear excerpts of the documentary film Spies of Mississippi. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D-May Roberts checks in with Damaso Rodriguez, Artistic Director of Artist Repertory Theater. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan speaks with Celie Pines and Kate Bingaman Burt about Design Week Portland 2014. Pines runs a graphic design business, and Bingaman Burt teaches graphic design at Portland State University. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Our fall membership drive begins tomorrow with an 8-hour